Well, as the last few people are coming in, getting their seats, can I say a very warm welcome to you for coming to us this evening. It's great to see you here. This is the second event of our Real Lives Week that we as Oak Hall Church and Caterham Baptist Church are putting on for our community of Caterham and the wider area. Just to give you a bit of an overview, we've got a shed load of people, well, five actually, coming just to share their real lives with us. That it's great hearing about other people's stories, isn't it? Their life stories, their life experiences, and particularly as churches, we're really, really encouraging to listen out for how people have actually engaged with God. And this evening, we've got Debbie Flood, one of our country's Olympic rowers. Are we allowed to say that? Do you belong to us as a country? You do now. Our country, Olympic rowers, and she's going to come and tell her story, her real life, about what it's like at the absolute top of the rowing community. We've also got, as you've been seeing on the screen behind me, we've also got Pete Sampi, who was a cellist as a boy. A bit of a spoiler alert, he got to grade 8 at the age of 10. Yes, I know. And then got into motorbikes, and his story is one of just complete amazing experiences. But also along with that, how he became a Christian. Billy McCurry, we're all looking forward to him. He's got a great story, great accent as well, really Northern Irish. Young people, if you want to work out the Northern Irish accent, you've just got to work out how to say the phrase, "The cows and the shars go moo," like that. And you just got to work it out, because he's going to come and tell us. And then Jeff Spence, who spent many, many years in the city, and again, how life in the city and life as a Christian isn't all that easy. So exciting stories to tell over the week. Do come along to all of them. They're such varied real life stories, but really exciting, really engaging. I hope you'll enjoy this evening's to start off with. If you're wondering again about details, they're all on this sheet as you came in. So do keep hold of that, and they summarise both the guests and also the venues that we're going to be at. Some housekeeping. Again, if you could turn off your mobile phones, that'd be really helpful. The loos, the gents, that way, just follow the corridor till you get lost, and it'll be about there. And the ladies, through that way, and again, one of the stewards will direct you down the corridor that you need to go to. But they're quite well signed as well. The fire exits, again, they're all signed, but just do take note, the green signs, follow there. We'll meet out in the courtyard at the front if in the event of a fire. And also there'll be an interval, which is great, some good nibbles. As we go out for the interval, that'll be in about 45 minutes' time. If we can go out both sides, and that'd be really, really great. Nothing remains except to welcome Andy. Andy's our musician for the week, and he's a great guitarist, great singer. He's going to kick us off with a song, and then we'll go straight into Roger and Debbie. Thank you.
Great. Well, here we go. It's going to be an exciting week. All sorts of characters visiting us and sharing time with us. And I write pretty simple songs, and I want to sing a song that I wrote for a friend of mine, and maybe we're going to get to know each other this week, and I'll write a song for you too. But this friend, things were kind of not going the way that he hoped they would, and I wrote this song called Arms Held Open. Why don't you write about what you're really feeling? 'Cause someone can see you, and someone is listening. Or are you scared? Scared to admit the way things are really, yeah, the way things are really going. Where's the anchor? Where's the anchor to your life now? Where's your safety? Where's your safety, your security now? You're trying to hold on to something that's slipping away. Like trying to hold on to, yeah. Like trying to hold on to the hours in the day. Don't you turn away from the way that you're facing? Uselessly trying to rebuild what you're losing. Why don't you turn to him and leave the confusion? Fighting, stop kicking and fighting and aching, and rest in the beauty, the tranquility and richness of a father whose arms have long been held open, a father of whose love. A father of whose love we have often spoken, and a father whose heart, a father whose heart has been viciously broken. For he wants to give you, yeah, he wants to give you. He wants to give you, he wants to give you peace.
But let me just say, it's good to see you. Thank you for coming tonight. My name's Roger, and we'll be hearing from Andy a little bit later on. Let me tell you what we are doing. I'm going to be interviewing Debbie in a few minutes' time, and then we'll have a break, some refreshments. I'm not quite sure what... You can't see the refreshments, can you? But I know as a northerner, down south, you call them canapés. In the Midlands, they call them nibbles. And up north, where I come from, we call them freebies. But anyway, there are some freebies. So we're going to have a little break, something to drink and eat. And then we're going to look together to conclude the evening by digging into the Bible and seeing how it brings it all together, all the things that we've heard tonight. So I think you'll really enjoy the evening. Then we invite you to stay around. We'll cross the caretaker's palm with silver so that he won't drive us out quickly. Stay around and ask questions. And if you want to meet up with somebody in the next day or two just to talk about any of these issues, I'm sure we can treat you to a coffee somewhere and have half an hour or whatever. But there are other opportunities to chat through some of these things as well. We've brought a bookstall. I can't believe it, but apart from the one or two books on the far end, everything is only £1. Oh, right, I can tell I'm not in Yorkshire now. In Yorkshire, oh, yes, wow, etc. I'll just tell you something about Yorkshire. I am very proud of the fact that I come from Yorkshire, as every Yorkshire person is. And a few months ago, I was at the Nidderdale show. It was the last of the agricultural shows we have in Yorkshire. And I like to go to it each year, and I give out some Christian leaflets. I've got various ones that I use for that particular occasion. And I can give out a few hundred. But I've got one called A Little Bit of Heaven on Earth in Yorkshire. And just one other thing to say before I tell you what happened. There are huge parts of Yorkshire where they still speak with these and thous. And anyway, I was giving out these leaflets and this country yokel said to me, "Is thou a Yorkshireman then?" I said, "Well, yes, I am." "Was thy father a Yorkshireman?" he said. I said, "Yes, he was." He said, "Does I have cheese with that Christmas cake?" And I said, "Yeah, I always have cheese with my Christmas cake." And then he said, "That was a Yorkshireman then." And then he said, "I always says, cake without cheese is like a kiss without a squeeze." So there you are, if you want to know why we have Christmas cake with cheese, but we do, and etc. Anyway, so all the books there, apart from the ones on the very end, are just £1 each. And we'll have different books night by night, so have a look tonight, because they may not be here tomorrow. Let me just mention three. Everyone a Winner is a collection of, I think, 18 stories of sports people. And but they're all Christian sports people. They either became Christians as sporting folk or when they were much younger. So Debbie Floods, will you sign autographs here, Debbie? Oh, wow. And it's only £1. That's amazing. And Henry Alonga, the cricketer. Dan Walker, television presenter, of course. Ewan Murray, rugby player. Anyway, there's loads of them, different sports. And an explanation as well at the end, how to become a Christian. So they're just £1 each. And then this one, it's called Grill a Christian. I say it deliberately slowly, because if you say it fast, it's Gorilla Christian. So it's Grill a Christian. And basically what it does is every question that non-Christians ask to Christians is answered here. Not in huge detail. You might get a page or two or three or four for some of them. But very often they're just short answers. Who made God? Who was Cain's wife? Isn't the Bible full of contradictions? Does science contradict the Bible? Why doesn't God stop the trouble? 65 questions, all in this one book, answered, and it's just £1. And a little bonus. This is really for the teenagers, but some of you older ones might like it as well. It's called Beyond Beans on Toast, and if you buy anything on the bookstall tonight, we'll give you one of these free of charge. Oh, thank you. Right, you're getting it. And it's gorgeous. It's got loads of recipes in. And it's got stories as well as to how people became Christians and how to become a Christian. It's a lovely book, and it's a freebie tonight. You're a miserable lot, aren't you? I think that's amazing. You're not going to get... Anyway, you won't get that on Amazon. In fact, if you want this one on Amazon, $6.99 plus postage, and you might get it in a few days, and it's a... Anyway, never mind. There we are. Let me just read a few verses, if I may, from the Bible, and you'll see why at the end. They're quite familiar verses, but you'll see why I'm reading them. So it's found in 1 John. So John was one of the disciples of Jesus. He wrote John's Gospel. He actually wrote the book of Revelation right at the end of the Bible as well. But he wrote some little letters, and we call them 1 John. So you'd think we could have come up with a better title. But anyway, 1 John, and this is chapter 4, and this is what we read. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God. For everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. He who does not love does not know God, for God is love. In this, the love of God was manifested toward us, that God has sent his only begotten Son into the world that we might live through him. In this is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son into the world to be the propitiation for our sins. And then in verse 14, and we have seen and testify that the Father has sent the Son to be the Saviour of the world. Well, hang on, and you'll see how all that ties in together. But it is my great pleasure to introduce to you tonight Debbie Flood, and I think we should give her a really good welcome. Debbie.
I'll give you a handshake. Great to see you. Debbie, it's really good. Oh, this goes back a lot. I think we'll sit on the edge of it.
Right. Debbie, it's great to have you. Where have you come from today?
I've come from Henley-on-Thames.
That's a rowing capital.
It is the rowing
capital.
You
don't sound as though you were born in Henley.
No, I'm a Yorkshire girl through and through.
Really? Mm-hmm. I could feel the sort of sophistication and the cultural vibes. Okay. In fact, you live just up the road from me, don't you? So
it's
good. So Yorkshire and... The rivers in Yorkshire are not particularly conducive for rowing, are they? They're sort of bendy and rocky.
Yeah,
and
more like rapids and bends.
I know.
So rowers like long, straight rivers. So.
And they like them downhill, don't they?
Well, the thing is, if you go downhill, you have to get back.
Oh, okay, all right. So you like them on the flat. Okay. So how did you get into rowing?
Oh, I loved sport when I was a youngster. I was definitely encouraged to use up my energy and be outside playing sports when I was younger. So... that was definitely something that I loved doing, but also I used to watch the Olympics with my dad. My mum and dad were both quite sporty as well.
Was that when television was black and white?
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
We had a black and white telly.
Yes. Okay.
So yeah, I used to watch the Olympics and I used to think, wow, they're superhuman. It was almost like another world, you know, like watching something on the TV only. But, you know, my dad really encouraged me, you know, just work hard and do the best that you can do. And I thought, I wonder if ever I'd be good enough to you know, make the Olympics and be able to represent my country. So I tried lots of different sports. Running was my first love. Then I got involved in judo. And actually, for judo, we had to use the rowing machine in the gym. And nice. Having done sport all my life, I was naturally quite strong on the rowing machine. And someone just came up to me in the gym one day and said, oh, are you a rower? And I was like, no, and I'd never seen it on the television. It wasn't anything my school did. Rowing wasn't big in Yorkshire at all. So it was a complete unknown. But I just thought, oh, I'll give it a go. Why not? Let's see what happens.
And the rest, as they say, is history. How many years have you been rowing?
So I first started rowing when I was 17, in 1997.
Oh,
so
okay.
I've been rowing for a fair while.
Oh, really? Okay, right. We've worked that out. And your home, you said your parents were interested in sport. Was it a Christian religious home or not really?
Yeah, I was brought up in a Christian home. So my grandparents were actually missionaries in Africa, in Liberia. And so from when I was born, I would go to church with my parents and my brother, a younger brother. And it was, you know, part of my, I guess, structure growing up. But then it wasn't really until I was 15, I would say, I became a Christian.
So how did that happen?
So if you'd have asked me when I was a youngster, you know, are you a Christian? Do you believe in God? I would have said, yes, you know, I'm in a Christian home and I go to church. I'm a Christian. But actually, it wasn't until I was 15 that I started to listen a bit more in my youth group and realised that actually becoming a Christian is not something that's automatic. It doesn't matter where you grow up. Actually, it's a choice that each of us have to make for ourselves. And I realised, even at that age, at the age of 15, I knew that God had given me the gifts and abilities and talents to do my sport. I had a passion about that. And I knew that he'd blessed me those particular, you know, abilities. We all have different things that we're good at. And for me, that was part of my makeup. And I was very happy to accept those gifts and say, thank you very much, I'll get on with that. But actually, I realized that I didn't have a personal relationship with God. And actually, it wasn't about what you do. You know, it wasn't about being good enough to get to heaven or being good enough to know God. Actually, God loves each one of us and wants us to know him. But for, you know, we're not perfect. I can't say that I've never had one wrong thought or done one wrong thing. And actually, that separates us from God. But God loves us so much that he gives us the gift of his son Jesus, who died for me and for all of us on the cross. And I realized this when I was 15. I realized that, you know, to mend and to have that relationship with God, who is my creator, I needed to ask Jesus into my life. And that was my first step and how I became a Christian.
Debbie, just to explore that a little bit, we'll go back to rowing in a moment, but I think there is immense pressure now on children growing up in Christian homes, in secondary school, at your sort of age, 15, 16, 17, huge pressure from the teaching staff, as well as just the peer group roundabout, to sort of drift away, even walk out on Christianity. Did you sense that pressure? And I'm not saying you're old, but it was a few years ago. But did you sense that pressure or not?
It was certainly, particularly within my sports world, I didn't know anyone else who was a Christian. So people didn't understand why, you know, what, you know, going to church was all about, really, and don't know who God is. So, and for me, I think when I was a youngster, I wanted to be the same as everyone else. It was, you know, I was a sheep. I wanted to be accepted and do things that everyone else was doing. But actually, I was really blessed. My parents very much encouraged me to, you know, stand up and, you know, to stand in what I believed. And that, as well, I learnt through my sport, because I was the only person in my school that rowed, and I just learnt actually what you know to be true and what you believe is very important to not, you know, not ignore and not drift away from.
So you, when you went into rowing and the whole, you know, it's almost an industry of sport, isn't it? How did you, as it were, make yourself known as a Christian in the rowing world?
Yeah, again, I was God was very gracious. I think I would have been very nervous about doing that to start with. I was a new girl, I was from Yorkshire, everyone else was from the London area. And I was quite shy when I first started rowing, and I could talk forever now. But when I when I was a youngster, you know, I wouldn't say anything to anyone. But early on, because I wasn't very good to start with, but then I suddenly shot onto the rowing scene, and I got interviewed by James Cracknell, who was one of the leading Olympians at the time, for our National Regatta magazine. And you know, he asked me what I did with my week around rowing, and I'd mentioned that I went to church on Sundays. I mentioned that I was Christian and that I was involved with, you know, group activities in the church during the week and helping with things. And, you know, I'm thinking I was not going to include it. And then the next thing I knew, this went out to, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people, every single rower in the country, and this interview, and including that I was a Christian. And I, at first, I was quite nervous of that. But actually, it was such a blessing because it was just everyone knew. And actually, it really gave an opportunity for people to come and ask me questions and come and quiz me about it. Or if someone else was a Christian that maybe they hadn't told anyone else, they would come to me and say, I'm a Christian too. And actually, it was an amazing blessing. And, you know, throughout that time in rowing, there was lots of challenges and lots of people who, you know, had strongly opinionated questions and real, you know, really didn't understand the Christian faith. And, you know, but then I had some amazing conversations, and you know, for me, you know, God blessed me with those abilities, but also put me in that world as a Christian, as a witness to Him.
So, how did you get spotted for a potential place in the Olympics?
So, when I first started, actually, I was rubbish. I was really good on the rowing machine, so I was strong and I was fit. But if anyone has ever rowed, it's just, the boats are so unstable. I mean, I went on this rowing course in London. I thought, this will be really good, you know, row up and down the river, learn how to row. Little did I know how technically difficult it is. And I pretty much spent my first week swimming because I just fell in so much. But, I don't know, just something kind of kept me going. And about 3 months later, I joined a club back in Yorkshire, and I was still coming last in all my novice races. And the coach came up to me and he said, look, Debbie, you know, you're doing your A-levels and I know you're working hard at school, but you know, you're pretty keen and you're spending all your spare time down at the rowing club. And, you know, I just don't think you're going to be much more than an average club rower.
Oh,
gutted. Like, you know, for me, the Olympics was my dream. And, you know, I just really thought maybe this was my sport. And so I was absolutely gutted at the time and, you know, said to my dad, look, what should I do? I think, you know, I'm not really improving that much. And anyway, long story short, but I carried on rowing because I really enjoyed it. And actually, then another coach came along and looked at me and said, okay, well, you don't need to work on that. You don't need to work on that. You can't row. You need to work on your technique. So it kind of went from there. And he then took me through juniors, under 23s, and into the senior team. And there's like quite a process to get into the, you can go to the GB trials and you go through the age group categories. So once I came through under 23s, I was in the pool of people who trained for the GB team.
Right. What does training mean? How many hours a day do you train?
Training. So man, it's so nice nowadays to have Lions and to found the snooze button. But, you know, as a full-time athlete, we train 2-3 times every day.
When you say times, how long is a time?
So a session or a time would be around 100 minutes, so just over an hour and a half.
So you train for nearly 5 hours a day, just rowing?
Mostly rowing. I would say 3/4 is rowing, and then we also do weight training and work on the rowing machine. But we get 3 weeks off a year. So,
oh, that's good.
Yeah. So after the World Championships, which we have every year, that's not Olympic year, or after the Olympics, we get 3 weeks off. And that's it, because the winter season is trials all through the winter season, and then trials finishes, final trials in April, and then we have a whole racing season, finish at the beginning of September, and then we have 3 weeks off. So you have a day off after you've raced as well, or a travelling day if you're travelling to training camp. But, you know, no weekends,
it's hard,
no Lions.
Hard slog then.
Yeah, there was many days.
Have you got to be careful what you eat?
We have to be careful to eat lots.
Oh, right. Yeah. I could become a rower. When you say eat lots, are you allowed to eat anything? You know, can you eat chili babies?
I do like chili babies, actually.
Oh, right.
But
okay.
Maybe not the whole of my diet. But, you know, for us, you know, you're training up to 5 hours a day and you are burning off so much and you need the energy and you need the hydration as well. So, you know, I would eat 5,000 to 6,000 calories a day. So 2.5 times the amount, you know, the recommended amount. But, you know, obviously what you put in your body is fueling you. So it needs to be good stuff. So it's essentially a balanced diet, but lots of it. I miss that now. I have to be careful.
So now if you eat it, it has an effect. Yes, okay. All right, so how were you selected? Which was the first Olympics you were selected for?
So my first Olympics that I got selected for was Athens. I did go for Sydney, but that was a really tough time.
Because?
Well, I'd finished school, and my life plan, I decided what that was, and my life plan was to row full-time for 2 years, so take a two-year gap year before you go into uni. So row full-time for 2 years, go to the Sydney Olympics, and that was my rowing, that was my Olympic life done, and then I was going to be a veterinary surgeon. So that was my, that was what I was focused on, that was my life plan, moved away from all my friends and family, down south, trained full-time for 2 years, got injured, and then came second at the trials, which meant that I wasn't selected for the single in Sydney. And at the time, you know, my world felt like it had fallen apart.
Did you question God?
Yeah, absolutely. I questioned why he'd put me there. I'd questioned that I'd wasted 2 years of my life, and I kind of said, God, why am I here? You know, I've just wasted 2 years of my life, moved away from my friends and family, and I haven't achieved what I wanted to achieve. Mm. And actually, it took my coach at the time to pick me back up and say, look, you haven't made the Olympic team, but you can still do the under-23 World Championships, and you can still do Henley Royal Regatta, which was, you know, it's a really big event within the rowing world. So I kind of eventually picked myself back up and ended up racing at Henley Royal Regatta and becoming the first British woman to ever win that event. And then I raced at the under-23 World Championships and became the first British woman to ever win that event. And actually, no one has done since. Now, I say that, but it's not about the results. The reason I tell that is because when I got to the end of that year, and I did go to the Sydney Olympics as a spare in the end, which was amazing, I suddenly realised that if you gave me that choice again, that I could either have gone to the Sydney Olympics to compete or I could have done what I did, I would have totally chosen what I did because I wasn't good enough at the time to go to the Olympics. And actually, those two races were the kind of springboard and beginning of my career, and I had such an amazing time at those events that it made me realise that actually I was going to be carrying on rowing. And it just always come back to that point in my life, because even though I became a Christian when I was 15, you know, however long and however many years you've been a Christian, you're always learning, and God is always teaching you different things, more of who he is and more of who you are in him. And I just suddenly realised that actually God had my life in his hands, and my plans are not always the best plans, but actually his plans are the right ones. And you know, my plan for my life was to row full-time for 2 years and be a veterinary surgeon. Now, I ended up rowing for 15 years and becoming a prison officer. So totally different. But God had better plans, and he knew where he wanted me to be.
So you believe God, this immense God, infinite God, is interested in Debbie Flood?
Yeah.
There are millions of people on planet Earth. You think he's interested and has a plan for you?
I know, and it is a hard concept to get around because, you know, he created the stars, he created the Earth, yet he loves every individual person and actually knows everything about you, the good, the bad, you know, every single detail of your life. He knows your heart's desires, and he wants to be in relationship with you. You know, we were made, yes, with ability and purpose, and but first and foremost, we're made to have a relationship with him, and that's what he wants and he cares about each of us.
Now, you said earlier, Debbie, it's not about results, but it must be quite something to be on the top part of a podium and have a medal put around your neck and the national anthem being played.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, the first time that happened?
Yeah, so the first time my national anthem was played was at the World Championships in 2007. So 10 years later, you know, that was when I first heard my national anthem. And it's a wonderful moment, and it's a real shared moment as well. In rowing, I was always in a team boat. So,
with how many others?
Usually four. So
four
altogether. I was usually in the quad. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is it imperative that the four of you get on?
It's not always the case, but it helps. Because
what,
you know,
do you sometimes have real wrangles?
Not necessarily, but you wouldn't necessarily that you're best friends with everyone. You know, in a big group of people, there will be people you're naturally, that you naturally click with and that you naturally want to share, you know, and spend all your time with. But actually, you know, the rowing team was an amazing environment to be in, because actually there was an underlying respect between everyone, because you're all working hard, you know.
And you're all dependent on each other.
Are,
we'll come on to that later
absolutely.
On.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay, tell us about Athens.
Athens was awesome. I mean, that was my first competitive Olympics, so it was the one after Sydney. So being selected for Athens was
which
amazing.
Which, of course, is where the Olympics began.
Yeah, so the home of the Olympics. It was so hot there. It was such a hot place. We raced really early in the morning, but that was a really special experience. And, you know, I'd not won a senior medal until that point, so I'd never won a world championship medal before then in the senior level, and neither had any, the other three in my crew hadn't either. So we'd been doing well that season, World Cup level, but, you know, we just, it was just amazing to be there. And actually, we're really, really good friends now, all four of us. We still see each other every year. We're like big sisters. But we came second to the German crew, and the Germany at that point had never lost the Olympics in that event. And we knew the girls really well. We'd raced against them for the last kind of many years.
Oh, so you know the opposition, do you?
Yeah, yeah, you get to know them. I mean, some of the girls some of the German girls as well.
You didn't ever feel like spiking one of them? No, okay.
We do have banter because you do get to know them and you see them at events and you always say hello and see how they're doing. But then, you know, when race day comes, you know, the sunnies are on, the cap's down, you know, you're in race mode. But then you'll always say well done after. I remember one training camp, one of the German girls sent me a picture message of, because when you swap kit after racing as well, you have like spare kit and you all kind of swap kit and things. So they'd sent me a picture of them all rowing in British all-in-ones, which is what we call our racing suits. So we sent them a picture back of all of us in German all-in-ones eating ice cream. Oh, it was hilarious, yeah. It was a lot of banter.
Okay.
It was good fun.
But you got, so they were on the top of the podium, yeah. But you got, say, and were you pleased with that?
Yes, it was an amazing experience. I mean, so hard to describe. For the four of us, again, like I say, we were such close friends and we'd travelled, you know, in the senior team together for 7 years. So just standing on the podium with our arms around each other, we hardly even said anything because you shared those ups and downs along the way. You just know that it's really precious.
Debbie,
do you pray?
Do you pray?
Before racing?
Well, I'm going to come on to that.
Do I pray? I do
generally?
Pray, yes.
You do. And do you pray before a race?
I would always pray.
Because I know what I would pray. And I'm going to ask, do you pray that you'd win and the others would sink?
Do you know, if everyone was Christians, though, we'd have problems, wouldn't we?
If you all sang.
Yeah.
Aren't you tempted, Lord? Pull the plug on theirs?
You know, inside you do desire to win, but I would never pray that particularly.
So
I
what
would,
do you pray?
Yeah, no, I would pray that I would absolutely do my best and fulfil, and we would, as a crew, you know, fulfil what we're capable of doing. And also that we will, that, well, that I would be able to glorify him in whatever the result, because... Mm. You know, there are such a range of emotions in wins, in losses, in ups and downs, and in different coloured medals. And when you put your life into it, you know, training every day until apart from 3 weeks of the year, everything is geared up towards it. You know, it's kind of gold medal attitude, gold medal nutrition, gold medal hydration, gold medal resting, gold medal training, you know, the attitude. And so wins and losses come with real... They feel, you know, they get exaggerated. They get their extreme emotions because they're extreme elation or extreme disappointment. So,
but you were thrilled to get the silver.
It was wonderful.
And
yes.
You brought it.
I
in,
have.
In a sock.
It's in my Athens sock.
So are we allowed later on to look at
yes,
it?
Yes, yes. So just feel free to. It's been dropped on assembly floor. It's got little dints, though. Don't, yeah. It's been passed through hundreds of hands. And it's a bit
I know, because I've held it before. It's very heavy, isn't it? It's really.
They're solid silver, so they're heavier than they look. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. So you got this and you were chuffed. You came back from Athens thrilled.
Yes.
4 years later,
yeah.
You were in... Where was the next...
So Beijing was the next race. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sorry, but we've got some film footage of you in Beijing. Do you mind if we show it?
Go for it.
I'm going to upset you now, aren't I? You need to watch carefully and watch the Chinese put an outboard motor on just near the end. But anyway, you watch...
Okay.
Oh, right. Okay, sorry. We haven't got it quite yet. You didn't win, did you?
So, no. And we... That whole 4 years, because we work in Olympic cycles, it's not just about each World Championships. You know, our mentality is the Olympics is the pinnacle of our sport. So we work in the GB team, we work in four-year blocks. And that's what we're working towards. And actually, the quad were world champions in 2005, 2006, 2007. Now, I wasn't part of that boat in 2005, you might have remembered that I said that the first time I heard my national anthem was 2007. 2006, we actually won. We were actually world champions. in the end, but we actually came second on the day, and then Russia got disqualified for a positive drugs test later on in the year.
Surprising.
So we didn't get our national... Well, in hindsight, yeah. but we didn't have our national anthem that year. But we, so I was world champion. The boat had been world champion in those 3 years running up to the Olympics. So obviously one of the favourites. And we'd had a bit of a up and down year. We'd been beaten a couple of times in the World Cups, but we went into the Olympics absolutely backing each other and, you know, going for that gold medal. We wanted to become Olympic champions.
And you were favourites, really, weren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, we were definitely.
Are we okay to see this now? We're not sure. No, we may have to leave
that's
it
okay.
there.
That's okay. I can commentate
you're
through.
You're pipped at the post, aren't you? Which is awful. And I'm sure they put an outboard motor.
We pretty much led the race for... Well, we led the race from start to about 6 minutes gone. And then in the last 17 seconds, they managed to overtake us in that last little bit.
How? Why? China. What happened?
You know, we actually had a fantastic race. We went... Profile-wise, we went faster in that last 500 than in the middle bit, which is what you want to do. But just they went faster than we went faster. And, you know, at the end of the day, that is sport. And if someone goes slightly faster than you on the day, then they win. And, you know, but we crossed the line. We were absolutely gutted.
So you got a silver, but you were gutted that you only got a silver.
Yeah, I mean, Athens was amazing. And then in Beijing... You know, especially, you know, leading the race for that long. And then even when you're overtaking, you're still trying to go for the finish. You're still trying to go back through them. So you can never think that you've been beaten until you cross the finish line, because you're not until you cross the finish line. So even until those last few strokes, you know, you're hoping to win that gold medal. Mm. So you cross the line, you haven't done that, and you've just... You know, deflated. And, you know, I mean, our pictures are terrible. We need to get our pictures redone, because we were all just crying on the podium and in our interviews.
Presumably you're totally physically and emotionally drained,
totally spent,
aren't you?
Yeah. And, you know, looking back on that race, I would still say, oh, you know, I wish we could have become Olympic champions. That would have been, you know, amazing. But at the same time, extremely proud of my crew. Oh, here we are. Here's the race.
Okay.
It's in little sections.
But it's Great Britain all the way as they head towards the 1,500-metre mark. It's looking, though, that the Chinese are starting to
make a
move.
So we're ahead at that point.
In 20 strokes, they've managed to overtake and heading towards the finish line. It looks like the Chinese girls will hit the Great British team at the post. They're picking up their rate, and they will. It's a good for China. Great Britain with the silver.
Oh, well, there we are. Yes, yeah. Okay. Don't show that picture to your fiancé,
no.
Will you? No. All right, well, we got the gist of it. Did you blame God for that?
No, I think, you know, for me, even the next day, for us, it was really about being united as a crew. And also, I knew that is just the nature of sport. And however much I wanted to win that race, it wasn't going to be the be-all and end-all. It wasn't something that defined who I was. And
Say that again.
Yeah.
So winning the race wasn't what defined you.
No, absolutely. And you see in elite sport, and I saw with actually my crewmates from that race, how... With the many athletes, you know, when you're winning and when you're doing well, actually you feel on top of the world, you feel like you're winning in life. And then you see athletes when they're not doing so well, that they feel like they're losing in life. And for me as a Christian, I feel that gives me just such a wider perspective, because, you know, I'm a rower for a season of my life, but that's not who I am. And, you know, I went into the rowing world as a Christian, not wanting to the rowing world to shape me, but actually wanting to be shaped by my faith and by who Jesus is. And that is something that really helped in my stability throughout my international career, because you can get just tossed around like on a wave with what people think of you, you know, how the media portrays you, you know, how you're doing well from one day to the next in training, what the coaches are saying, what the athletes are saying. Whereas actually, you know, people's opinions of you might change daily, but actually in God's eyes you don't change. You know, God's love is constant, and it didn't matter whether I was winning or losing.
Now that must bring amazing stability, because I think one of the girls never raced again, did she?
She was completely broken by it, you know. She eventually scraped into the eight in London, but she just wasn't the same from that point, because she felt a total failure, even though we'd we'd had an amazing race as a crew. We didn't do anything wrong. It was, you know, we were still a fantastic achievement. But it really affected her, because it affected her identity, because her identity was in her sport.
Mm. Debbie, we're running out of time, but I just want you to talk us a little bit about the London Olympics. But first of all, we have this torch.
Yes.
So did you carry this?
I did.
How many others did it?
Well, so there are 8,000 holes in this, representing the 8,000 people who carried a torch.
So which one is you?
It's this one right here.
So you were chosen by whom to carry that?
So a lot of the torch carriers were nominated by their communities, and actually the rowing team nominated me to carry a torch because I did quite a lot of things outside of rowing. So I was nominated, so it was
and
a real
where,
privilege.
Where did you carry it?
Well, it was supposed to be in Yorkshire.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But our training camp dates got changed, so it ended up being 3 days earlier in Morecambe. Wettest, windiest day ever.
That's Lancashire
honestly.
For you.
Yeah.
Anyway, did you... How long a distance do you carry it?
It's not far. It's only about 1,600 metres. So I basically physically, as slowly as I possibly could, tried to make out like I was running with the torch, zigzagging from side to side, high-fiving all the kids down the side. So I did look a bit silly because the security guards either side of me were walking. but I didn't care because it just lasted longer. It was great.
And was it great?
It was awesome. It was amazing. It was such a great start to the 2012 Olympics, and it really got the atmosphere going. And being part of London was amazing. I did race.
Yeah, just tell us
in London,
quickly
yeah.
why this shape? Why is it like this?
So the three sides. Because London held the games three times, and again, feel free to come and have a look later if you haven't seen one before. I used to think that Olympians were superhuman. Well, I am, because I've got a superhuman handhold down here where I help. No, that's not actually true. I'm actually a bit of a muppet as well. So
you've dented it.
Yeah, I have dented it. I managed to shut it in my car door twice.
Oh, by the way, can we see your Beijing medal?
So my Beijing medal, I managed to lose.
You lost an Olympic medal.
I take it round to schools like all the time and all over, and I'm
no. Just a minute. Yeah. You lost an Olympic medal. How many times?
Oh no! So I've actually lost it twice. I had to get it remade, and then I lost it at another event. I think it just jumps out of my pocket, because this one managed to stay in my pocket.
So you've not got that at the moment.
No.
Amazing. Very quickly, Debbie, because I just want to ask one or two crucial questions at the end. Just quickly, you got to the final in the London Olympics,
didn't you?
But you didn't get it.
Yeah. You know, I personally had a lot of injury in the run-up to London, and it really affected our crew. So making our Olympic final was actually... We had some incredible races to get there. So we were really proud as a crew of making our Olympic final. It was an achievement to do that, but we did not have a good race in our final. And it's quite hard for an athlete, because if you can say, I've had the best race possible, but we still didn't make it, you can kind of, you know, eventually get around, you know, accept that that's all you could do. But for us, we had a really disastrous race, so it was really different to process. But, you know, I would still say, if you asked me which my best games were, my favourite games, I would still say London, because it was just the most amazing atmosphere, it was the most amazing games, and actually it was still wonderful to watch all my friends win medals. It was heartbreaking not to be a part of bringing that medal haul back. But at the same time, I wouldn't have changed not being a part of that team, Lots and lots and lots of people asked me after London, oh, 4 years, was that worth your 4 years of your life? I know. But, you know, without a second, I'd say, yeah, it was worth it. I don't regret a single, you know, second that I put into that, because, you know, that's where God placed me. And that's also that I chose to make that step with him in that. And it's not just about the results. You know, if you strip all the results away, you know, there is so much more within my rowing career. You know, the friendships that I've made, you know, the things that I've learnt along the way, what God's taught me, you know, how he's shown me himself. So actually, you know, winning medals is awesome and it's great, but it's not the be-all and end-all.
And you know, if you had a choice of medals or Jesus, you would choose Jesus, right?
Of course, no.
But if I could say, look, deny Jesus and you'll get three golds over three Olympics, what about that?
Definitely not. I mean,
because
you know,
why? Because we expected that answer. Yeah. But why? Why is he so important to you?
Because, you know, medals will pass away. You know, anything we build on this earth, you know, is not going to be going with us. So in the light of eternity, knowing Jesus in my life is the most important thing I could ever have and the most important choice I can ever make.
When you say in the light of eternity, what you mean, life after death, heaven, hell? Do you believe these things?
Yeah, so when we pass, you know, where will we go? We will spend eternity with God, or we will spend eternity without God. Mm. And with God is heaven, and without God is hell. And, you know, I want to be with the God that created me, and that he—that's what, you know—he created me to be in that relationship.
And are you confident about that? That you one day will be with God in heaven?
Absolutely. You know, the Bible—the Bible is God's word. And
your confidence
clear.
Isn't that you're good enough or you've done great in the in sport, but it's in what Jesus did for you on the cross. And,
absolutely. Yeah.
Mm. Debbie, I think last of all, how, you know, you, humanly, we would expect you to have a long life ahead. But how would you like to be remembered? One day, you know, because of what you've done, there will be obituaries in the newspapers about you. What would you like them? There will. You know, I'm going to read about you one day because I'm sure I'll outlive you.
Yeah.
And what would you like to be remembered for?
That's a good question. I think for me, you know, I want to be showing other people God's love. So I want to be remembered for being, you know, a faithful Christian who loved others. And, you know, that is definitely something that God has put on my heart. Every single person has worth and is precious and has capacity. And I love to help people see what they're worth and how much capacity they have. So off the top of my head.
Yeah, I didn't warn you of that, did I?
Yeah, just having known Christ and loved others.
You've got an engagement ring. Is he a nice guy?
He's a good egg, yeah.
Yeah, good, okay. Is he a rower?
No. He's been involved in the sports world for a long time, but he knows nothing about rowing, which is probably a good thing.
Is it? Yeah, he's a Christian.
He's a Christian, yeah.
And that's the most important thing. When's the big day?
We haven't set a date yet. He's South African, so he's sorting out his visa things at the moment. So,
all right, okay. Debbie, it's great to have you. It really is. Time's gone, but we're going to have a little break now. There are going to be refreshments that way and that way. Please do help yourself. But will you stay around? We can come and chat. Can we have selfies with you?
Definitely.
Can we hold the medal?
I'm happy for people to have a look at these. And also, I'll stay around at the end as well afterwards.
Great. So and you'll sign your autograph in the book.
Of course, I'll sign the £1 books.
Yeah, and just one other thing. You work now for whom?
So now, I was a prison officer for a while, and now I work part-time for Christians in Sport. So part of my role is walking alongside and encouraging other athletes in their faith and in their sport. Christians in Sport actually supported me for 15 years in my international career, you know, adding to my church family support. So it's wonderful to be able to do that and to be able to encourage athletes to be, you know, leaning into God and trusting in him and him being, you know, their identity. So it's great.
Debbie, it's great to have had you. Thank you very much. Let's show our appreciation. Well, now we are going to... Oh, you've got to announce it. Yeah, over to you.
Great. Again, just the point of housekeeping, I did forget to mention is if we have our refreshments in the hall behind us there and not take food and drink into this auditorium, the caretaker would be very pleased with us indeed. So if we can make our way that way in about 10, 15 minutes' time, we're going to meet back here just for the final part of our evening. Brilliant.
Thank you.